movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
We are joined once again in a remote sort of a way by Esma McCarthy, Fionnuala Jones and Mick O'Connell. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Sean. Hi, guys.
Okay, you're all there. We can hear you all. Mick, how's the shop going?
It's going great. It's going great. People seem to be wanting to drink. It's amazing.
That is an astonishing thing. All right. And but like business is at a kind of fairly steady level, is it? Or is it, does it go up and down a bit?
It's the usual thing. Friday and Saturday nights, people are still all zoomed out and desperate for a glass or two of wine. So Friday and Saturday nights are busy, busy, busy. And during the week, it's mainly online deliveries.
Right. Okay. And is it a bit like, you know, takeaway? That you're going to go, I can't look at another pizza or I can't, you know, are people coming into you and going, right, I've drunk every single conceivable Bordeaux, what's next?
Yeah, sometimes. And then we just go straight for the hard liquor. I was on Empirical Spirits, a tasting this morning at 10 o'clock. They're a very trendy spirits company from Copenhagen. And yeah, I was tasting them at 10 o'clock because I've tasted all the wines already. I had to.
Yeah, of course you did. Right. So today we're going to be talking about a Rioja.
Yeah, we're going to taste a petarade of wines. That's the collective noun for wine as well.
That's what happens after the wine.
Exactly. We're going to be doing Lopez de Haro Rioja Reserva. That's from 2015. That's a delicious kind of modern meets traditional Rioja. And then we're going to be doing a natural wine from Swartland in South Africa. South Africa really needs to help at the moment. Their wine trade has been decimated by various COVID things. So this is Testalong. Baby Bandito, and this is a really interesting wine because it's just 10 degrees of alcohol.
Oh, right, okay. I suppose, yeah, because their reaction to COVID was to ban the sale of alcohol, so that probably didn't help the wineries at all.
And they have a huge domestic market, you know, that they have all the tourism kind of related to it. People head to wineries for the weekend and eat dinner and lunch there and things like that, and all of that has been closed down. So the wineries are really suffering there at the moment and really relying on export markets.
And the two movies today, Esther, couldn't be more different. From the sounds of them.
Absolutely. First of all, though, Swartland, is that not the best place name in the world? It sounds like somewhere Thor would go to have a face off with other Marvel guys.
Well, to have a glass of Testalonga. I mean, that sounds pretty.
I can hear him say it. Yeah, we've two very different movies this week. Malcolm and Marie is an interesting project because it was a big film experiment, I suppose. When the pandemic shut down the movie world across the globe, including in the US, Zendaya and her director, Sam Levinson, who was supposed to be directing her in a new series of Euphoria, which is a big budget TV series that she's won an Emmy for, actually. But they had to start thinking outside the box because that was not going to happen anytime soon. So what they did was, it's a model that has actually been embraced by a lot of crews since and is now being followed by other crews. You know, they rented a house in a remote location. They cut their crew way back. And it was just 22 crew on a 14-day shoot. Or as an Irish indie filmmaker might call it, a big budget movie.
Yes.
But this is what they were kind of doing. And they just got writing and creating. And the result is this two-hander between Zendaya and John David Washington. An actor's masterclass, of course. Given the talent of both people involved, you wouldn't be surprised to hear that. But it's called Malcolm and Marie. And it's nearly 2 hour long row between a couple who know too many hurt points. Totally unrelatable at the moment, you know?
Well, yes. Why would people who are fighting with each other want to watch other people who are fighting with each other? I kind of got the impression though it's generated a bit of controversy.
Yeah, it has. I mean, there's a couple of things. There's the age gap has come up. She's 24, he's 36. I have no beef with that, really. A 12-year age gap between two very intelligent, consenting adult characters, you know. We've seen a lot worse in Hollywood over the years, quite frankly. So there is that. And, you know, it doesn't feed into the age difference between them in any way that's odd or that jarred at me in the film either. So I'm not on board with that complaint, really.
And so Rams is, you know, kind of what it says on the tin.
Yeah, it's kind of sweet. You know, it's not the slickest movie ever made. It's the sloppy jumper in the back of your cupboard that you wouldn't wear to go to a meeting, but like you wear a lot more than you'd like to. It's just a big comfort hug of a film, really. And it's got Sam Neill in it, and he's the best thing about it, as he is in most films he's in. I just love Sam Neill. I know he is not the hugest actor in the world in terms of range, I suppose you could argue. But there is just something very endearing about a movie that has his screen presence. You know, I was actually, after watching this, I was thinking of making him my, just pausing him on my computer and making him my screen background, because he just makes me feel better at watching him.
All right. Okay.
And this is lovely. It's directed by an Australian filmmaker called Jeremy Sims. And, it's a remake of an Icelandic movie from about 5-6 years ago that caused quite a stir, and was a big breakout international hit, like was the kind of festival darling back in the days, and we had festivals with people sitting in cinemas at them, and it did really well. So it was always inevitable it was going to be remade, and I suppose I'm glad it's getting remade in Australia, because I think they're Australia, you know, we talked about the New Zealand film Baby Done last week, and I think that filmmakers in that part of the world are very good at quirky. And this is as quirky as they come. It's really sweet.
Okay, fair enough. And Fionnuala, are you sitting in your attic as usual, looking out at the desolate streets?
I sure am. There's a guy actually today now, and he seems to be cutting shrubbery. So that's an exciting new addition for me.
Right. Okay. Has he been out there doing it for long? Is he doing it in fancy shapes, or is he just like angles and stuff?
He is a fancy accoutrement that I couldn't possibly think of the name of. He's actually twisting it at an angle as I speak to you now. But it seems to be a fairly standard job that he's doing. So
okay. All right.
Good for him.
Sounds like he's showing off there a bit. Maybe he knows you're watching him. Now, devastating news for Hollywood and for the Screen Actors Guild, particularly, it seems. They've lost one of the most valued members.
Yes. Former President Donald Trump, he has parted ways with the Screen Actors Guild, the SAG. This came after they threatened to expel him, pretty much, following the insurrection at the Capitol earlier in January. They were threatening it, seemed to be a lot of talk around it, but he beat them to it, and he parted ways with on his own terms with a bombastic letter. He was facing disciplinary measures. So he was like, you know what, I'm just going to get here and quit myself before you can get rid of me. Very insane letter in which he said, who cares if you're going to get rid of me? I'm over it. I'm done. Whatever.
Right. OK. I'm surprised he was even a member in the first place.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. Like, it's, I don't know, he didn't have a lot of time for the union's president. That's Gabrielle Carteris. He said the SAG has done nothing for him besides collecting dues and promoting dangerous un-American policies and ideas. Or I think she said that about him, actually. He also praised himself, pretty standard for Trump's part, claiming he greatly helped the cable TV business and celebrating small cameo roles he played in various movies. He's humble, that one, isn't he?
Yeah, his quote, I'm very proud of my work on movies such as Home Alone 2, Zoolander and Wall Street Money Never Sleeps, and television shows including The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Saturday Night Live, and of course, one of the most successful shows in television history, The Apprentice. So there you go, underselling stuff as ever. Mick, which wine should we have first?
I think we'll do the Testolonga first. Given that it's a breakfast wine at 10% ABV, it makes sense to start with that
it
one,
does.
I would say.
Yeah.
So this is made from Sanso. Sanso is a grape variety that in South Africa for a long time would have been kind of overcropped. And by overcropped, I mean they would have had too many bunches of grapes on each vine. So it really would have been used for bulk wine. And during apartheid, people would have farmed for bulk, and a lot of smaller farmers would have brought in their grapes into the local wineries and would have been paid in brandy. So they were very happy to have a bulk crop like Sanso. But it's a very interesting grape variety when the vines get old. So when the vines hit 25, 30 years plus, you start to see less bunches of grapes on the vines, and they actually start to make really quite complex wines. And there's a new kind of set of winemakers in South Africa. A lot of people refer to them as the South African Young Guns. The region of Swartland, which really does belong in some sort of Marvel movie. But the region of Swartland is home to a lot of these guys. And this particular person and his wife, Craig and Carla Hawkins, the two of them make really stunning natural wines from Sanso up there. These are, Swartland's quite a hot place, so it's kind of Mediterranean climate. So you get all of these kind of Mediterranean style varieties like Syrah, Grenache, Sanso, Carignan, all of these kind of things. Testolonga themselves, they're really, really at the north end of Swartland. So it's kind of next stop Namibia in terms of winemaking. And Craig and Carla are really, really hands off in terms of what they do. So they don't really add a lot of sulfites or anything that in the winery, and all of the production is organic. This particular wine at 10 degrees alcohol is super, super, super light. It's somewhere along a very, very light red or a really, really dark rosé. So I would personally, for this style, I have it in the fridge right now, and I'm very much looking forward to having it as an aperitif before, well, at 4 o'clock, I'm going to drink the entire bottle.
Right.
It's only 10 degrees, so it's fine.
Yeah. Right. So, and it's, but does it taste like it's only 10%?
It tastes like proper wine. It's crisp, it's fresh, all of those things. But I suppose, yeah, you can taste, there's no alcohol burn from the wine at all. Mm. And I suppose some people like that quite voluptuous kind of thing that you get from an Amarone at 15 degrees alcohol. But this is refreshing. This is really something that you'd have before a meal. But it's absolutely delicious and really great aperitif style.
And it's designed then to be kept in the fridge.
If you drink this one at room temperature, you get all this kind of strawberry, very ripe red fruit. But for me, I quite like it from the fridge because it kind of takes on that more crisp, tart kind of approach. And it's raspberry, cranberry, all of these things. And that kind of fruit spectrum really, it adds to the refreshing nature of the wine.
Okay, very nice. All right, so we do have a commercial break coming up. Esther, what movie would you like to do first?
Let's do Malcolm and Marie first, I think, for sure.
Okay, Malcolm and Marie coming up after this.
You know what, Malcolm? I feel like once you know someone is there for you and once you know they love you, you never actually think of them again.
That's not true.
It's until you're about to lose someone that you finally pay attention.
Is that what this is?
What?
It's what you're threatening. If I don't apologize, I'm going to lose you.
I'm not looking for an apology, Malcolm.
Well, what do you want, a screenplay credit?
Don't be cruel.
No, I'm serious. I know we talk for hours and hours about work. Is it so much of a f***ing nuisance that you like compensation? I had a draft of this script before you ever came into my life.
It's not about credit, Malcolm. I don't want f***ing credit.
Well, what is it, Marie? What do you want?
The film is beautiful. I'm proud of you. It took forever to make and it was f***ing tough, but I have one question for you. Do you think that the movie would be as good as it is if we weren't together?
No.
And that's all I wish you would have said.
Right, that's Malcolm and Marie. No call for that sort of language. Are they just
shocking?
Are they fighting for the 2 hours, Esther?
Well, I really liked this, okay? But I feel like it might be the Irishman of this year. I feel like people are going to be driven mad by it and they're going to come back and give out to me in the weeks ahead. And I watched, it's a good question because I was about 40 minutes into this and it's very well written, but it was too actors going at each other until that point. And I was like, oh my God, this is draining me now. I don't know if I can do 2 hours of this. But it changes. So it kind of starts with a huge row. They've just come home from the premiere of Malcolm, who's played by John David Washington's first film, first feature. And he's wired and he's an egomaniac anyway, like a lot of directors are. But he's wired. He's gotten all this praise for his film and he's just like pacing up and down the house talking about himself and how great he is and the praise he's gotten for this film. Even the white guy from IndieWire liked it, was one of the lines in it. And it's just really interesting, but she's not talking at all. And she is, you realise, Marie, who's played by Zendaya, is really peeved about something. And men will know this. You know, when a woman goes quiet and you don't notice, you know how much trouble that can bring to a guy down the line? That's what happens here. So basically, her gripe is, I won't go into too much because there are reveals in their row, you know, there's a lot of texture to what's going on between these people. But she is, I suppose she doesn't star in the film, but she thinks it's based on her own troubled past. So she has a past of addiction and he's brought some of that into the film and she kind of chides him for not. Her real gripe is that she didn't thank him when he basically did a speech where he thanked everybody but her at the premiere of the film. And that sets the stage then for a hell of a row between them. It does feel overblown, I'm not going to lie, even though you're watching some really great acting. But when it settles in, I think, if you can get past the first 40 minutes of this, I think it's a really, really rewarding film. Because it is shrill at the start. That row is kind of horrible, even though the writing's good. But when you get past that, it actually becomes very funny because, you know, they start teasing each other and living, you know, people who live with each other know very well, each other very well, how they bounce off each other. And you get to know them better as people. You get to know more about their relationship. But about an hour in, there is an absolute rant from Malcolm that I should be really offended by as a reviewer, but I thought it was hilarious. It's a takedown. An absolute takedown of a white middle-aged female film critic who he calls Karen, obviously. Yeah. But he goes off in a 10-minute rant. And Zendaya is terrific here because she is, it's such a beautiful, natural performance from her because she's lying on the sofa and he's going in and out of the back garden of the house and she is just laughing her head off when he's out of sight, when she's out of his sight, but the minute he's there, she's trying to keep a straight face. Basically, it's a really good review he's got, but the critic tries to interpret his review and offer her thoughts on what he was trying to say as a black filmmaker, and this drives him crazy. He's not a guy who likes being put into a box anyway. And it just caught fire for me then. It just caught fire in that 10-minute scene. I mean, I laughed out loud several times at it.
Okay.
You know, some of the writing's really on note about reviewers, I have to say. Some of it definitely connected with me. And I loved it after that. It's overcooked. It is patchy. It can go from, I suppose, like any relationship, maybe that's the whole point. It can go from monotonous to fascinating, even over the course of a few minutes, but it is a bit shrill, especially in the first hour. I have to say, though, it's beautiful looking. It's shot in beautiful 16mm Kodak black and white film. I don't know how they got it, how they sourced it. It's as rare as hen's teeth these days, but it is just a lovely looking film. And I think really signals out Sam Levinson as a filmmaker to watch. You know, he's the son of the great Barry Levinson, of course. You know, he's come from Hollywood royalty, really. Barry Levinson, who directed Rain Man, Good Morning Vietnam, and of course, The Great Diner. So he is, you know, he's filmmaking royalty, but he's doing a really good job here. He's doing his own thing with it.
Yeah. Does it feel like a play, or does it look like a play a bit, given it's a two-hander and...
Given the dialogue and given that they're going at each other, very much so. But I think what they have achieved by setting it in this really swish house, which is almost a character in itself, especially at the moment, you know, they are kind of stuck in there with each other. And filmed as it is on black and white, I think is really pulls it out from being trapped as a play, you know, because it's so stunning looking. It's so cinematic looking, even though it is essentially a two-hander, you know.
Mm-hmm. So far this year, Esther, the film that you're getting most disagreement about is Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And once again,
really?
Someone saying, I wanted to love it, really I did, but what was that? Granted, I think Bozeman was great, but the movie itself was not. It was just one long riff of dialogue after another, too fast. It felt like watching a video game. I was so fatigued by it. It felt like I was watching a stage performance rather than a movie. What is the name of that particular style of filmmaking called? I couldn't put my finger on it until about 30 minutes in. Then it hit me. It reminded me of Fences with Denzel Washington. Hated that too. Of course, Fences was based on a play, wasn't it? And that was very dialogue heavy.
That's interesting because Fences was written by the same playwright. They were both adaptations, and I just can't remember his name. I'm a really well-known African-American playwright, but they were both adaptations of stage shows, and they were both created by the same person. So it's interesting you say that.
Well, there you go. That's why they hated it. Someone else wants to know, what did you think of the Golden Globe nominations? James Corden nominated for The Prom. I mean, really, they've lost the plot.
I mean, the Golden Globes are barmy anyway.
Like, yeah.
People who know the Globes, they're just crazy. Like, first of all, they're voted for by slightly fewer than 100 people. And they're the foreign journalists based in Hollywood, basically. And the only reason, really, they've become so prominent and so, you know, so much a big part of award season is because they were regarded as a precursor for the Oscars, which in itself doesn't stand up to fact-checking either. They often nominate people because they nominate people in two different categories. They claim they're Oscar predicting, but they're really like doubling their predictions anyway. So they're bound to get some of them right, you know. Mm. James Corden over Meryl Streep was astonishing to me. Astonishing. She was the best thing about The Prom. She's Queen Meryl, for the love of God. You're supposed to nominate her every year as well, and that's it. But I was... a bit disappointed for Paul Mescal as well, I have to say, though I was delighted to see Daisy getting her dues at last.
Yeah.
But I was disappointed for him. And I was looking at the punditry for that one, and he was regarded by a lot of the US trade publications as a shoe-in for a nomination for limited series. So that was a bit of an upset as well.
That was a weird one. Fanula, I'll bring you in on this, because I Will Destroy You was completely ignored.
I was just about to say, it boggles my mind that I Made a Story You wasn't nominated for anything. Like, and it's been dominating the news cycle about it, I think. Just this big snub for Michaela Cole's series. If anyone hasn't watched it, I implore you to, because it's some of the most powerful television I've ever watched. She is like beyond talented. And when you see things like Emily in Paris being nominated and Lily Collins, who I like, it just seems like, I don't know, like white privilege out in full force, to be honest. I don't know. Michaela will be fine, though. She'll survive this. As Esther said, like, Golden Globes is a bit barmy, and I think people kind of understand that it's not necessarily a testament of quality a lot of the time.
Yeah. And on the subject of movie controversies, what does Esther think of the controversy over casting a young 35-year-old Carrie Mulligan to play a woman in her 60s in The Dig? Ralph Fiennes seemed to get off scot-free, even though he's older than the character he plays.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of her age, I suppose, when I watched it. And I think they take advantage maybe of that. She's not a very well-known historical character outside a certain circle. So I didn't know. I only saw the controversy when I saw the controversy, if you know what I mean. I didn't have any experience that jarred. I will say, it is award season. If you see controversies whipped up at this time of award season, there's usually someone pulling a string there behind that, you know. That's all I'll say.
That's so difficult to believe. Yeah, I must say, though, I watched The Dig last weekend, and, you know, there was an age difference, but I would have said, I actually had to look up Carrie Mulligan's age because, you know, whatever way she was made up or not made up, she looked older than her actual years, I thought. I thought she was well into her 40s, maybe hitting 50 kind of thing. So that's kind of a...
Which wouldn't be far out at all. Like,
yeah, which,
know,
is a testament to how, you know, how well she played that character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you like it? What did you think of it?
Get on with it, lads. I liked it. It was a sweet film. I would have knocked out 20 minutes of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It was a bit, sometimes a bit too in love with itself. Esther was also speaking. August Wilson is the playwright, by the way.
That's it.
And the other playwright involved in both productions was Ruben Santiago Hudson. So that's a hell of a name. On the subject of Sam Neill, Esther was expressing her love for him. Cara wants to know, has Mick tasted his wine? I think it's called Two Paddocks.
Yeah, it's absolutely delicious. Pinot Noir from New Zealand. Yeah, he makes really, really great wine and is a real addition to the wine trade, and that he's obviously a fantastic character and a very enjoyable man to spend time with. And he does tastings on Zoom and stuff like that. He's brilliant.
All right. Fantastic. Paul says Sam Neill worshippers might check out his cameo appearance in the Australian TV series Rake. My latest Netflix recommendation, a gritty black comedy set in the illegal stroke political world of Sydney. Neil plays an eminent surgeon whose penchant for threesomes with his wife and the family Rottweiler gets into the public domain. Sold! Ah, really? Who couldn't want to who wouldn't want to see that? Anne says, I feel the exact same way about Sam Neill. It's like my exact thoughts being expressed. He's also very sexy, says Anne. Now that you've got that vision in your mind, Anne, of him, the wife and the Rottweiler, does that still hold, I wonder? As someone who doesn't want to sign their name, wants to know, Mick, what is the best wine for hiding in mugs that won't give away that I'm having a cheeky mug of wine? I've been working from home for almost a year with four kids and have started a Friday routine of having my wine in mugs so I can start around 3 o'clock. I don't want the smell to be too strong that the kids shout something out while I'm on a Friday afternoon Zoom with work. It's rare I have a meeting though, to be fair, hence why I'm happy to have an afternoon drinky poo. Says it on. I did see a meme recently saying it takes a village to raise a child, but a vineyard to do homeschooling. So do you have any advice on that, Mick?
I think the only thing I can say is you got to stick to white wine so you don't get red wine teeth, because that will come up. That will come up very clearly on the screen.
Yes. That is an excellent tip to give. Right. We do take a commercial break. A bit more goss, one more movie, one more wine after this. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We've had a fair few texts, as ever is the case, asking to repeat the name of the first wine, Mick.
Yeah, I probably should have said the name of the first wine. It's Testolonga. That's the producer. It's a wine called Baby Bandito, and it has a motivational message in the title, which is chin up, and it comes as part of a range of motivational messages like follow your dreams, keep on punching. They're fabulous wines. You can get this in the Fumbly and Decent Drinks Club.
Right. OK. Baby Bandito, it's called, or a Testolonga. Again, more with the Sam Neill stuff. Adele says, like Esther, I love Sam Neill. Didn't he look great on Graham Norton recently? He was wonderful in a film called Dean Spanley from 2008, which features dogs and wine. Just referring back to the first movie that Esther was talking about, which is essentially just Malcolm and Marie, which is just a two-hander. Someone's texting in to say Euphoria, that being, I assume, the TV show. Euphoria did a special episode after series one where it was just Zayenda's character, Rue, and her counsellor talking straight for an hour. She was spectacular in it. Two actors, one scene for an hour, and it was gripping. Well, indeed, of course, no one's saying that can't work. Your wine people are always being asked for a wine to pair with foods, but supposing it was just to hand make a lovely juicy Rioja, what meal or food would he choose to pair with it? What's his favourite food to have with wine? George wants to know.
I have to say, George, it tends to be the way that I do it. I'm such a wine geek that I pick my wine first and my food after. It tends to be the way that I do it personally. And generally speaking, if I was going to drink a Rioja Reserva, I'd be looking at lamb personally. And lamb with kind of rosemary, a lot of herbs, that type of stuff is absolutely delicious.
Right. Or chips, obviously.
Good old chips.
Yeah. Fionnuala, so describe for us, what is a no assholes policy?
It's Olivia Wilde's policy that she has on set when she's directing movies. And it's probably one that we could all use in our everyday life, I would say, whether you're directing movies or not. She was in conversation with the director of Promising Young Woman, Emerald Fennell, for Variety's Directors on Directors series that they do. And she said she got terrible advice before from another director that basically said the way to get respect on set is you need to have three arguments a day, three big arguments that reinstate your power and remind everyone else who's in charge to be the predator. She said that's the opposite of her process and she doesn't want to do it. She kind of wants everyone on the same level. So this is her no assholes policy. She said it puts everybody on the same level and it kind of dismantles that hierarchy that sometimes can come. It was interesting. It was an interesting comment because of the fact that Shia LaBeouf recently left a recent project that she's working on, Don't Worry, Darling. There's a lot of allegations that he was fired and there's always been allegations around him concerning his kind of behavior and whatever else. So people are kind of putting two and two together and saying that maybe this is what she's referring to. But obviously, none of that is confirmed. Harry Styles has actually replaced him on the set of that movie, in which he stars alongside Florence Pugh, who people will know from that movie that is escaping my Esther will help me here, where it's like a culty kind of a thing, and Little Women. That's not Little Women wasn't what I was thinking of, but anyway, he stars opposite her as a 1950s married couple, and they become ensnared with a cult in their idyllic town. So she's back starring in culty things, and that's coming later this year, the following year. It's called Don't Worry Darling. Will be very interesting to see how Harry gets on in a role that was intended for Shia, given that they are like two complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Really, that'll be very interesting. Somebody's texting to say more Sam Neill. He was born in Belfast, but he wasn't actually. When we checked it, he was born in Oma. But, you know, close enough. Brian says, Sam Neill, is it now? Does that mean Esther has got over her fixation with Ryan Gosling?
I mean, do I have to choose between them?
Yes, you do. You're on a desert island on one corner. You have Sam Neill in the other corner. You have Ryan Gosling. There's only enough water for two people.
Frankly, Sean, we're nearly a year into a pandemic and I'm not picking my favourite lead crush.
Right, okay. Fionnuala, which one would you let die of thirst?
Oh, I'm going to anger all of the listeners texting in, but probably Sam Neill. Just, I'm going to blame it on the age thing, but Ryan Gosling is just chef's kiss. And I'd say he's a very, like,
a
nice
what?
Person. Like, chef's kiss, you know that expression?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I see what you mean now. Yeah, okay,
I'm
right.
Gesturing, but obviously people can't see because radio is not a visual medium. But yeah, I love Ryan Gosling. He is divine.
Right, and those big sad eyes. But the big side, he'd sit there with the big sad eyes and you'd end up giving him all your water.
Yes, truly, yeah. And then I would die.
Wine, they could both live.
Yeah, well,
and we'd have a great old time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, the three of you plus Sam Neill's dog. Right, let's move on to our second movie of the day. It is called, appropriately, Rams. Here's a clip.
Mrs. Ram, I think it is RJD.
Yoni's disease?
No, Colin, I don't think you need to worry about that.
He has all the symptoms.
As far as I know, you've never, ever had OJD in this part of the world. And don't forget, I had a good look at that rhyme.
But you were judging. You were looking for different things.
Would you like me to have another look? I could talk to Les.
Would you?
You two haven't spoken in 40 years. Why start now?
If it is OJD, what are the chances that both our flocks
are infected? I don't think it is OJD.
No, it's not OJD. Right, so the sheep are sick. Is that the gist of it?
The sheep are sick. And I just have to say that was a last-ditch desperate attempt by me to get Ryan Gosling's attention. So if you're listening, like, just call me, okay?
Right, okay. definitely not finished. But
call someone. Just call someone, Ryan. Anyway, this is lovely. It's lovely. And it's that great thing that cinema in this part of the world does. And I'm thinking even last week's film, I'm thinking of a film from years ago called Castle, or the wonderful, wonderful Hunt for the Wilder People. It has a gentleness to it that deceives you. And you kind of, it hits you with a little scene, maybe an hour in, and you realise, no, this is not just a movie about a sheep gull. This is a movie about an existential threat to a community and a way of life. And it's very moving then when you kind of get on board with that. But they always fool me, filmmakers from this part of the world, with this. I think they just have an easiness in their filmmaking that just really is lovely. Anyway, this is a remake of the Icelandic movie, as I say. It was a big cult hit. I haven't got to see it yet. But people will know it, and what I'm hearing from other reviewers is that it's a pretty faithful remake of that film, but a bit more gentle, a bit more broad, a bit more Australian, I guess. And it centres on the relationship between these two brothers, Colin, who's played by Sam Neill, and Les, who's played by Michael Caton. And they work on adjoining farms. So you know when brothers and families inherit the farm and stuff, they don't want to split the farm up because it's bad for business. But sometimes if families are in conflict over that, it can be very difficult. So they work hand in hand to each other, but they have the same sheep, but they have their own kind of sections. They have prized sheep. They're called vintage sheep, actually. They're rare, kind of rare breed sheep. I'm not joking, Jean, when I say the sheep in this are magnificent. Like, there should be a Best Supporting Sheep Actor Oscar nomination, and they should all win it. But it's they have a very tricky relationship, though, you know. And when Les's favourite prize ram is diagnosed with a rare and lethal illness, and that's the initials you've kept hearing there, it's called ovine John's disease. It's foot and mouth for sheep, basically, but it's even worse in that it's a wasting disease where they just get thinner and thinner and thinner and then they die. So it's just a horrible condition. It's never been in this part of the country before. And, you know, the authorities are in straight away from the city, don't understand the way of life. And to prevent spread, ordering an immediate cull. What they're also offering people is money for their land, because you're not going to be able to sheep farm on this land again for about 6 years. And, you know, margins are already thin in farming and people are starting to go, well, maybe we'll go to Perth. My daughter's in college there. And you realise this is kind of the end of the road for a lot of these people and a lot of this community, you know. But there's a little comedic touch throughout. Like, Les kind of rages against the dying of the light as these animals are taken away from him. But Colin, who's Sam Neill's character, he takes a kind of a slyer approach. He culls some of the animals to dupe the authorities, much to their annoyance. But he spares three of his favourite ladies, as he calls them, by hiding them in the house, and you get some wonderful comedy, like large sheep in a small house don't go well. And there's one scene where they even try and get the sheepdog to round them up in the house, which is just worth your tenor alone, you know. It's lovely. And people call to the house and he's trying to hide the sheep. And it's just like almost Laurel and Hardy with sheep, but with the sketches at one point. But then it just develops into that, back into a drama again. I feel the way you felt about The Dig, Sean. I was here a few times going, would you get a move on? Because the story isn't very big, you know. But I did like it. I did like it, and it is kind of saying goodbye to a way of life, and it's quite moving. The performances are great, all of them. Miranda Richardson shows up here as well, as she always does in everything she does. She's a local veterinarian who has a bit of a crush on Sam Neill's character, but he can't see it. It's nice, this one. It's a good film. And it's on all the usual rental or to buy platforms from today.
Right. OK, and I didn't ask you about Malcolm and Marie. Where can people see that?
Malcolm and Marie is on Netflix. That's dropping on Netflix from today as well.
Right. OK. All right. So if you already have a Netflix subscription, you can just go straight to that.
Yeah,
right.
They have a great run of films at the moment, Netflix. I think Netflix is having it like mini award season. I think these would have been scheduled. A lot of these films would have been scheduled to be released in cinema. So they would for a couple of weeks before going on Netflix. So they would qualify for Oscars. That's why we're having a great Netflix movie every week at the moment.
Ah, right. OK. The hashtag, by the way, is birthday movies on Twitter. Now my Twitter is acting up, so I can't actually read any out. But it is birthday movies, because 9 years ago today, Ivan Corliss started the hashtag game on Twitter. So happy birthday and congratulations to Ivan. Which means, though, next year when it's the 10th anniversary, you can't do birthday movies. But I suppose you can come up with some sort of version of that. Also on Twitter, somebody did tweet a bit of a tip for the woman who wants to drink the wine out of the cup and be on Zoom meetings. Little tip is, if you blow occasionally into the cup, thus giving the impression it's something hot you're drinking, that might throw people off, along with the drinking white wine. So what's our second wine to be drinking today, Mick?
So we're going to do Lopez de Haro, which is a fantastic Rioja, and this one is a Reserva from 2015, and it tastes fantastic out of a mug or a glass or a tumbler, you name it, it's good. This is a producer who is right in the heart of Rioja in Sonsierra, which is a beautiful old village, right in the heart of Rioja, old vines along the River Ebro, not far from Logroño. And Logroño is the place that you'd want to go on holidays. I kind of wake up in the middle of the night screaming and sweating, thinking about Logroño. Like, literally, Logroño has one of these little Calle Laurel, which is a little street where you can go and hit tapas bars one after another, taste specialities. And I do genuinely wake up having nightmares about that. But anyway, this wine will, in one way, take you there. It's velvety, it's lush, it's plush, it's oaky. This is really vanilla, raspberry, strawberry kind of style fruit, bit of cinnamon, really, really complex kind of wine. It's great value as well. This is 20 euros kind of RRP, and I mean, this is widely available as well. You can get this in Greenman, Just Divine, Devaney's, Bradley's down in Cork, Worldwide Wines Waterford, Winehouse and Trim. You'll find it all over the place. It's made by a young guy called Ricardo, who took over the family business from his dad about 15 years ago. Ricardo's only about 35, and you get that kind of bit of innovation in all their wines, but always a little nod to the past. So this is real modern and innovation in a glass. It's delicious.
How much will it set you back?
20 euros.
20 euros. Okie dokie. Right. Thanks, Mick. Finally, Fionnuala, has your man finished his hedge yet?
Yeah, he's been gone. I don't know where he's gone now. I hope he has a nice weekend, though.
He's probably going in. He's probably inside drinking wine from a mug. Thank you all.
As he should.
Thank you all very much, Fionnuala, Esther and Mick. That's our lot for today. Our production team today, Aidan McKelvey, Claire Collins and Michael Quilligan. Kieran's up next on News Talk and the Hard Shoulder. We'll talk to you on Monday at 2. See you then.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.